You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Without further ado, let's bring in Mike Puma. You could follow him on Twitter at @NewYorkPost_Mets, Mets beat writer for The Post. Mike, hi, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you today?
I'm great. We so appreciate your time on this Saturday afternoon. Thank you so much. Before we start looking big picture, let's look at where this Mets team is right now. Unfortunately, they lose to the Phillies last night, 4-3. Let's talk about Walker. 88 pitches. I know he addressed the media yesterday, last night after the game, and said, listen, you know, this is the organization is making the decision for me. Your thoughts on them shutting him down maybe a little too soon, especially last night?
Yeah, he maybe could have gone another inning, but at the same time, he pitched a lot, given them a lot of innings in the second half. It's kind of been their workhorse a little bit. I can see both sides of it. I certainly can see Walker's frustration there because he's only given up two runs and he thinks he's got a little bit left. But, at the same time, the bullpen for the most part has been pretty good for the Mets this year. It's one of those things when, especially when it doesn't work out, you look at it a little bit more.
Not too many games left. September is almost coming to a close. I know they're 5.5 games back to the Braves. What's your gut telling you, Mike? What do you think happens here?
Well, the Mets are mathematically alive, obviously, but, barring something crazy here, going undefeated the rest of the way or losing one game, they're not going to get there. The wild card race is, even crazier than the division hopes because you have so many teams ahead of the Mets in that wild card race. You look at the division race, it's 5.5. Could the Mets get it down to 3 the last weekend of the season and have a mathematical shot going into Atlanta? Maybe, but, the Mets just haven't played well here. That's the bottom line. They've lost 7 out of 9. They've had an opportunity to kind of keep it alive, and they haven't played well enough.
So chances are we're not going to see DeGrom the remainder of the season. I would imagine so, right?
I'd be surprised if we see DeGrom at all. I think they'd like to get him, ramped up at least to kind of see where his elbow's at, but. As far as actually putting him on the mound in a game, I don't think that's going to happen.
All right, Mike, let's talk bigger picture. And I read your column this week in regard to what the future might hold for this Mets organization. And let's start at the top, right? Like, let's talk about Steve Cohen first and foremost, and his fascination, his addiction. Listen, I'm not going to sit here and judge him because, we're all addicted to social media, especially I think us in the business, right? Like, I can't go 3 hours without checking out Twitter, checking out Instagram, but a lot of that is because that's how we get our breaking news now, right? Like, Schefter, right. All these, everybody's breaking news on social media. So I guess it's a different situation, but nonetheless, what is the perception of Steve across the board, other owners, other executives in Major League Baseball in regard to how he handles social media and the things he says about his own team?
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit of trepidation about him just because of the social media aspect. He may be right now viewed as kind of a fan more than a fan with a lot of money who owns a baseball team as opposed to a Major League Baseball owner. And I think that's probably part of the learning curve in your first year owning a team. And he's been very vocal on Twitter, reactionary at times. That's his right, right? He owns a team, he's got a Twitter account, but at the same time, you kind of set yourself up sometimes to look bad, and especially to people in the industry who maybe look at it and say, do I really want to work for this guy if he's going to be, out there maybe undermining me on Twitter or kind of revealing what our plan is? It's certainly Cohen's right to go out there and say whatever he wants on Twitter, but at the same time, I think it hurts his perception a little bit.
You know, but it's interesting, right? Because I remember when you know, we were talking about the sale of the team, and when Alex Rodriguez and J-Lo were in the mix, and you know, and then Steve got it. That was a positive, the fact that he was a fan. Like, the narrative was, oh, this is great. We've got a guy who loves this organization, loves this team. He's a fan of the Mets. He's got a boatload of money. He's going to do everything and anything he can to help this team get back onto the winning track. Like, that was a positive when he bought the team, right?
I think it was viewed as a positive. And hey, look, he's got a little bit of George Steinbrenner showmanship in him, I think. You know, there's a little Barnum and Bailey in him. And there's nothing wrong with that, I think, in one regard. But at the same time, yeah, if I'm a GM or president of baseball operations, I don't know how that makes me feel.
All right, so let's go one step down with Sandy Alderson and also, you know, what the future holds for the organization in the front office, whether that's Theo Epstein, Billy Beane. What do you anticipate happening here in regard to the search for somebody to come in and help really, take over this team in regard to president of baseball ops?
Well, they certainly want to lure a big fish, and you know, I think Theo Epstein's got to be on the top of that wish list just because he's a free agent. He's a guy who's won with the Red Sox and the Cubs. Does Theo want to do it? I don't know. He hasn't dropped too many clues to this point if he's anxious to get back in a front office capacity. But, I think you put him at the top of the wish list, and, you know, Billy Beane right beneath him just based on his track record building playoff teams with Oakland and doing it without a lot of resources. And, it would be coming back to New York, the organization that drafted him, the Mets in 1980. Certainly he's got a tight relationship with Sandy Alderson. So, I mean, I think any wish list probably starts there. Is it realistic? I don't know at this point. You know, I think maybe there's more of a shot at Beane than Epstein at this point, but it's really hard to gauge it.
You know, I envision somebody like Theo, who's probably, you know, wanted across the board in Major League Baseball, right? Like, I would imagine that he would come in with a checklist and say, like, all these boxes have to be checked in order for me to accept the job. And I wonder if Sandy Alderson would okay all of those.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Theo Epstein's certainly in a position to pick and choose, right? He's working for Major League Baseball this year. He certainly doesn't need to jump right back into front office work if he's not comfortable. There would be a checklist, and there'd probably be some ownership involved, 1 or 2% of the team, maybe. Would Steve Cohen be willing to, you know, give that level of authority to somebody? That remains to be seen.
All right. Well, one more area, and that is, you know, this roster and what's to come of it. You know, some decisions that have to be made with some of the players. Who are some of the players that you see potentially could get traded? Players that might not be on this roster next year. What do you anticipate this roster to look like in 2022?
Yeah, they're gonna have some big decisions to make. On I look at the guys performed a little bit who aren't under contract now. You know, obviously James McCann, they signed to a 4-year, $40 million. So, you know, that he's going to be tough to move, and you obviously locked up Lindor for 10 years. But you look at the guys you look at are guys like Jeff McNeil, Dominic Smith, J.D. Davis, Conforto. You have a decision to make as far as his free agency and, you know, extending him the qualifying offer, which, you know, I'm pretty sure they'll extend him the qualifying offer. I don't think he'll take it. So, you know, those are the key guys you really have to decide on there is Dominic Smith, J.D. Davis, Jeff McNeil, and, you know, what to do as far as track. Those are going to be some big decisions for the next head of baseball operations.
You know, last thing I want to tee up for you is, you know, Lindor with that 10-year extension, $341 million. you know, again, in your column, you allude to him and his personality and maybe not being the right fit. It takes a very unique special athlete to be able to play in New York City and with the whole thumbs down situation. Are you getting the sense that now that's kind of behind him and behind the fan base, or do you think that it's going to take a minute for that to go away, if ever it does?
You know, I don't think it completely goes away until Lindor goes out for a stretch and really plays like the Francisco Lindor the Mets thought they were getting. That's probably not going to happen this season. I think this will kind of carry over into next season and see how it goes from there. But it's clear that he's sensitive to the booing and the negativity. And, you know, you just wonder if he can put it behind him and play like that all-star shortstop for an extended stretch.
Mike, thank you so much for spending some time with us this afternoon. Mike Puma from The Post. Highly recommend that you go online and you read the column. Very insightful. Mike, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.